divorce. Even thinking about getting a divorce can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about how to make your mediation successful. Now, have you ever heard someone talk about their divorce and say that they tried mediation and it didn't work, that it failed, that they still ended up going to trial? Well, they may have been a member of that very select class of divorces that truly do need a judge to resolve the differences, or possibly they didn't take the steps they needed to make the mediation successful. Mediation isn't just about showing up on a certain date at the right time. There's a lot more to it than that, and making the commitment to be properly prepared will make a significant difference in the how long the mediation takes and the eventual outcome. Now, here to guide us through all this today, my guest is Joe Dillon. Joe is co-founder of Equitable Mediation, which specializes in helping couples in New Jersey and Illinois complete all the steps in their divorce so that they can do it peacefully, fairly, and cost-effectively. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Mandy. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
I'm so glad to have you today. So let me first ask you, like, people I've found talk about mediation and think it's one-size-fits-all, and it's not that at all. There are lots of different forms of mediation, and I think that can be confusing for people. So I thought maybe we could start to talk about, like, some of the different ways that people can use mediation.
Yeah, sure, certainly. Well, mediation comes in a lot of shapes and sizes, as you said, right? I've had couples where they've only had a single issue. So maybe they need to resolve what to do with their house, but they've worked out all the other issues surrounding their divorce. Or couples who have attorneys already and want me to come in and be involved as sort of a fifth wheel, if you will, and a neutral third party to help guide the party and their attorney and the other party and their attorney. And then we've had clients where they've come to us and said, look, we need your help, soup to nuts. We haven't done anything. We want you to take us through all the steps to divorce and help us with all the issues. So you can have a wide variety of people, from anything from like a single issue to a full-blown divorce to helping come in and break an impasse between a client and their attorney and another client and their attorney. So I think when people think about one size fits all, that's not the case at all. Right. Mediation can help in a lot of situations.
Right. And I've also had clients come to me because I do some mediation as well. And I've had clients come to me who've gone ahead and filed for divorce, and now they're under these time deadlines to produce agreements. And they're like, oh my gosh, we can't get this done on our own in time. Please help us. You know, we need this really fast.
Yeah.
We need this by Wednesday. And so,
of course,
that's when mediation can help bring in some expertise, because we know the paperwork that the court is looking for, and we know that we can help really guide the conversation and the dialogue more efficiently.
Right, exactly. You can cut to the chase.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So, and I've also come across people who Colorado has mandatory mediation, and people think that means that they have to go to mediation.
Right, sure.
And I've had this conversation. Well, no, I know it says that mandatory mediation, but if you've actually come to an agreement with your spouse and you've got all the paperwork worked out, you don't have to go to mediation, and you don't have to use mediation to come to agreement. So,
right, exactly. That's the thing, right? Mediation is another tool in your toolbox. If you have a disagreement, like in our case, a divorce is a disagreement, whether we want to stay married or not. And in that case, mediation can help if needed, right? It's a voluntary process. That's what we tell our clients all the time. Look, this is voluntary. We're here if you need us. If you've got everything worked out, you don't need us. If the court says it's mandatory mediation, you have to go. But before you called our office, you and your spouse had a conversation that said, fine, I'll agree on this number for child support or whatever, then you're fine. You know,
right.
So mediation, like you said, it can seem as mandatory or necessary, but it's just a tool to help people break an impasse. And if there's no impasse and they have an agreement, well, then, hey, you know, you don't need to get involved in mediation if you don't want to.
Right. So are there cases that aren't suited to mediation? Are there some clients who, you know, when they call you, as they're talking through, you're going through that sort of intake screening call, you'd start to think, I don't know if this case is really suited to mediation.
Yeah, you know, again, that's a great question. With mediation, it's a good faith negotiation, right? So there needs to be full disclosure by both parties. And sometimes people will call us and say, listen, I think my spouse is hiding money, or I think my spouse is buying another house without my permission. Those kinds of financial issues where you could really do more harm than good, those are not suitable for mediation. You know, when there's kind of, well, I call it financial infidelity, okay?
So right. Okay. It's,
you know, those are the kinds of things that you're really worried about. Another thing might be is if they're, again, going back to what we were just talking about, this being voluntary process, when someone calls up and says, yeah, my spouse doesn't want the divorce, and they're going to do everything they can to stop it. Well, unfortunately, you know, it's probably not appropriate for mediation because, again, you need them to come voluntarily, you know?
Right, because they're not going to participate in a...
Right.
The discussions just aren't going to be productive there.
And exactly.
I've also... put in that care. I call it willing and able to come to an agreement. And the I think what we were just talking about there is the willingness, the ableness.
Sure.
I look at if there's any psychological conditions that may make it difficult for them, for that person to make decisions or to compromise. So
right.
Personality disorders are a concern, even severe depression, where somebody isn't able to grasp what's going on or to do the preparations for mediation.
Right. It does take a lot of energy, right? Because like you said, with mediation, you need to come in not only voluntarily, you need to come in willing to participate. And there is a lot of work that the parties have to do in order to use mediation. They need to submit discovery and documentation and actively engage in sessions. And there are some people, especially those who suffer from depression, who simply aren't able to do that. And then again, as a mediator, you're always asking, am I doing more harm than good? And you want people to get the best result in their situation. And while, you know, of course, as a mediator, we like to think, right, hey, mediation is great for everybody. But, you know, there are some limited cases where it's not. And I think you alluded to that before. You know, there's a very small percentage of people who can't mediate ultimately. But again, I feel that's a very small percentage if they're willing to do the work, show up and actively engage.
Right.
You know?
What about situations that involve domestic violence?
Yeah, that's difficult, right? Because, you know, I feel like we victimize people twice in that situation. When there's a restraining order or domestic violence, and you say to somebody, we can't mediate with you, it's heartbreaking because they say, like, well, I want to mediate. I want to stay out of court. Please help me. And sometimes what we've done is something we call shuttle mediation,
yeah,
where depending on the nature of it, right, this is typically used in a commercial situation, like more of a business dispute and those kinds of things. But we have had situations where the two parties have been in separate rooms in a courthouse. And as the mediator, you bounce back and forth, and you've got a bailiff or someone outside, you know, separating the parties. Admittedly, that's not ideal, and it does take a little bit longer. But
right.
If someone's really, really wanting to mediate, that is a solution for someone who, unfortunately, where there's a domestic violence issue. But we typically don't encourage or do that, you know?
Right. And Joe, so like, do you work on the basis, like, if somebody starts mediation with you, if it really isn't being productive, you can bring the process to an end and then they can move into more of a traditional litigation model?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we talk to clients, you say, look, try mediation first. What's the worst thing that happens? It doesn't work out. And then you can escalate. You know, we kind of feel like, okay, your next step would be to go to a collaborative divorce process or then to a litigation process. And why not try the option? And we find probably about 95% of our clients are able to successfully complete all the steps to mediation, come to agreement, and then, you know, get to the courts. So I say, look, I put it this way. If I told you, Mandy, you have a 95% chance of winning the lottery, would you play?
Oh, yeah.
Right. You know, you would. So, I mean, not that divorce is a lottery and a winning thing. I don't mean to sound like that. But, you know, look, you have really good odds to do this. Give it a shot. Put away your notions about what you think is or isn't possible. And just like we said, show up, disclose information, actively participate, and you'd be surprised how successful these things can really be.
So do you think that it's important for both parties to be on the same page about their goals for mediation before they come to mediation? Or is that something that you can, you as a mediator, like if you've got one party that says, I really want us to do mediation, and the other party says, well, you know, I guess we could give it a try. I'm just not that sure I want to go that route or if it will work.
Yeah.
Is that something that's like the first discussion that you would have is like, well, what are your goals?
Exactly. They don't necessarily need to be on the same page, but our initial meeting with them will kind of outline what their options are. And then from there, a lot of the times people will see, oh, okay, I can get the same or a better result by mediating, or, oh, this process takes less time, or, oh, I could save a lot of money by mediating as opposed to hiring lawyers and litigating. So whatever their goal is, right, one of those, usually it falls into one of those three buckets, then they start to come around and they say, well, okay, if this process is going to help me blank, you know, get this over with faster or save money or save time or reduce stress on my family, get a better result, then, okay, if you tell me this is voluntary and I can punch out at any time, terrific, I'll give it a shot. So that also helps, that non-permanence, if you will, knowing that they always can hit the eject button, you know, they can jump out of the process, right?
Right. And they haven't closed any options in the process of trying mediation. It doesn't mean that other things aren't still available to them.
Exactly. Like, think about it. Like, say you went to the store and you were going to buy a sweater. You don't buy the first sweater you see. You could pick up five or six of them, and there could be a whole bunch more out on the floor that you didn't even look at yet. There's other options available to you. Maybe you'll consider them if this sweater that you're trying on doesn't work out. But if it fits and you like it and you look good, you walk to the register, you bought it, and you're out of the store. You know, so you just tell people, look, it's a voluntary process. It's a great way to start, and from there, if it doesn't work out, and it's no hard feelings, right? We always tell people, and you can, I'm sure, appreciate this too, doing mediation and coaching as well, is look, I'm here to help, and it's really, you know, no hard feelings if you feel this isn't working for you. I don't take this personally, right? I'm just here to try to help, you know?
Right. So just to recap there, in terms of what you need to do to make your mediation successful, you need to understand what you want from the process, how the process might work for you. Make sure mm-hmm. that your situation is suited to mediation, that both you and your soon-to-be ex are willing and able to mediate, and that you don't necessarily have to have the same goals, but that's the first thing that you're going to talk about in mediation.
Sure. And then to be actively engaged, because sometimes people will come to mediation and they'll say, well, I'm only here because, you know, my husband wants me to be here. Yeah. My wife wants me to be here. And then they sit there and they fold their arms and they stare at the ceiling. And it's like, okay, you know, we're not really getting anywhere here. And then, you know, you have to kind of say, well, hey, guys, if this doesn't work out, what's your next step? What's your alternative? And then depending on how driven one party is to want the divorce, we'll usually say, like, okay, well, if mediation doesn't work out, are you willing to hire an attorney, file with the courts, or, you know, litigate this thing to the bitter end? And if they say yes, then you kind of look at the other spouse and say, okay, well, obviously this thing's going to go sideways if we don't get what we need to get done here. So why don't we give this another try, you know, and see if we can make a little more progress. And sometimes you're almost a cheerleader in a way, right? You're just trying to guide people and encourage them and keep them moving forward, because especially in our world, a divorce, it's not like we're planning a cruise with them and the right. ultimate result of our work together is going to be pleasant, you know?
Right, right. We're there to help facilitate an agreement. So, Joe, let's just take a short break here. Listeners, I'm Mandy Walker. You're listening to Conversations About Divorce, and today we're talking about what you can do to make sure your mediation is successful. My guest today is Joe Dillon. Joe is co-founder of Equitable Divorce. And, Joe, you have a free ebook to offer our listeners.
Yeah, we do. It's 10 Compelling Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce. And you can simply go to the web there, and the website is www.reasonstomediate.com. So just like the title, reasonstomediate.com. And you can download it right there for free and give you good ideas about how mediation works and why we feel mediation is the best option for divorce.
It sounds like a great little book for our listeners. And I will put that link in the show description. And listeners, if you're looking for more great divorce advice delivered to your inbox, you can sign up for my updates at sincemydivorce.com. So, Joe, let's get back to our questions here. And I was thinking the next step in making sure that you have a successful mediation is choosing the right mediator.
Sure, that's a big one. Absolutely.
Well, I almost think we could do a whole show on that, but they just
that's true. We could be here all day on that. You know?
But I think it starts with figuring out if there's any particular expertise that you need, like financial, or are your issues more around parenting, or do you need somebody who's dealt with domestic violence or relocation to another state, that type of thing?
Sure. Yeah, and the mediation is in most states. I can't speak, you know, across the board, but in New Jersey and Illinois, mediation is an unregulated profession.
Right.
So anyone can call themselves a mediator, and I happen to be an instructor here in Chicago at Northwestern University for their 40-hour divorce mediation class. And while most of the people that come through the class are in a, you know, related profession, maybe mental health, legal, finance, there are some people who are auto mechanics or hairdressers or things like that, and they're looking to make a career change. And so you have to say to yourself, in our world in divorce, you know, where there's lots of laws and moving parts, am I going to be comfortable with this person to guide me through the process and for them to know what they need to know in order to help me successfully come to an agreement? So you've got expertise and knowledge is one of the things. You've got other factors, like you said, Mandy, where, say, I have a case where my spouse wants to move out of state to Florida, and they want to take the kids with them. Well, you're probably going to want somebody who has more of a, you know, mental health background, a parent coordination background, who can help, because that's really going to be the crux of your issue. Or somebody who's in a lot of debt or who's self-employed. You might want a mediator with a financial background. You know, that's where my background comes in law and finance. And you say, well, okay, this is a complex financial situation. I need somebody who can really crunch these numbers with me. So mediators come in all shapes and sizes, and you definitely want to speak to a couple of them, or at least go on their websites, do some research, get to know them. And, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, like you and I are just talking right now, to me, one of the most important things is, am I comfortable sharing information with this person?
Right. Right.
I'm telling them my deepest, darkest secrets in confidence, of course, but I want to be able to open up to them and talk to them, and that's also key, you know?
Right. And you make a good point about being unlicensed. I know that there's no licensing here in Colorado. So I do refer people to, we have a professional organization called the Mediators Association of Colorado. And I tell, I recommend to people that they go on that website, look for mediators that have the professional designation, because that does mean that they've completed the 40-hour training and they've got over 100 hours of practical experience. Also recommend that they look for mediators who are primarily focused on working in domestic relations. Don't choose a mediator whose expertise or experience is mostly in HOA disputes and barking dogs.
Although I've known some barking dogs to cause divorces.
I mean, I think that the mediation skills are great, but as you point out, the technical knowledge involved in divorce and trying to help a couple work all the way through a mediated divorce is quite extensive and very different from those situations.
Yeah, and the law, it's like shifting sand. To give you an example, in Illinois, in 2015, we had a major overhaul of the maintenance statutes, the alimony. In 2016, we had a major overhaul of the parenting time statutes and how child sharing and custody works. There's rumor that we're going to have a major overhaul of the child support guidelines next year. If you're not paying attention to this, and you submit an agreement to the courts that you drafted and then someone has, you know, made it formal and turned it into the proper court-driven paperwork, and they get in front of a judge, and the judge says, this statute isn't correct anymore. This is 2 years old. Who was your mediator? And your name is, you know, out there. That's going to really ding your professional reputation. And it's no disrespect. It's much like watching television programs, right? So, you know, here in the U.S., we're coming up on the fall TV season, and they're launching all these new TV shows. It would be impossible for you and I, Mandy, to watch every single program that was out this fall, right? We have to pick one, and then we watch it, and we enjoy it, and we get involved, and that's how, in the same way, this kind of works. You got to focus in your area specialty.
Right. I just want, mediators, though, when you go to a mediator, the mediator's not giving you legal advice.
Right, exactly. So, they're bringing you a lot of information, and they need to be sort of that repository of information for you so that you as the party can be empowered to make the decisions that are in your mutual, you know, best self-interest. And so if somebody asks me, hey, how does child support work in Illinois, or how does alimony work in New Jersey, I need to be able to give them a pretty deep dive into that so they can go, okay, I understand. All right, let's talk about how we're going to come to an agreement, and then we work through the issues, you know. So that's a great point you make. You're not telling them what to do, not giving them advice, but you really do need to. These people are relying on you to provide them up-to-date and accurate information.
Right, and then, in terms of somebody who's coming to mediation, taking their responsibility for making it successful. It's if you do have questions about or a nuance on child support or spousal support, then you have to be prepared to go to an attorney and to get legal advice on that, and then come back to mediation so that, you know, using that legal advice, you know your parameters for negotiation, what a court may or may not do.
Right. And I think, you know, people, that's the hardest thing about being a mediator. You're in a helping profession and you want to help people move through this very difficult time in their life, in our case, divorce. And then they say to you, what should I do? You know, and they could be crying. They could be very upset. And as the mediator, you just have to say, I'm so sorry. I cannot tell you that. I can't, you know, tell you what to do. I can't give you advice. What would you advise, Joe? It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you know, as mediators, we all have our answers, our very clever, polite way of saying, because you cannot give advice and you cannot tell the parties what to do. You can, you know, provide them with options, and those options, maybe have you spoken to an attorney? Do you have an accountant? You know, those kinds of things to get information. But it is a difficult part of the process.
Right. And you are a neutral, the mediator's neutral. So you have to work to protect that neutrality and or maintain it.
Absolutely. And that is a hard thing, because people, especially in the divorce, they're trying to pit, you know, you against the other. It's triangulation, as my friends in the mental health community would call it. There's this kind of weird relationship that starts to develop sometimes, where they're trying to show you as the mediator what a horrible person my husband is or my wife is, and now you understand why I'm divorcing them and why I should get a better settlement. And what they don't understand is I have no horse in this race.
Right.
I'm simply a tool that they're using to facilitate an agreement. And so sometimes that can pose a bit of a problem, where they're spending more time, you know, hurling insults at each other than they are making progress. And that might be one of those cases we talked about before, where, you know, mediation may not be appropriate or effective unless they both get on the same page and say, look, we're going to put away the insults for now, and we're going to focus on moving forward. Because that's really what mediation is. It's a forward-looking process. Just because you missed my parents' 50th anniversary party 10 years ago doesn't mean you're going to get more alimony in the divorce, you know?
Right.
Some people think that, you know?
So what I'm hearing you say there, from maybe a different angle, is that if you one of the things that you can do to make your mediation successful is to really try and leave all of the emotional issues at home. Or, you know, if there are issues like past behaviors that you're feeling resentful about, go vent about those with a therapist, so that in mediation you can focus on getting agreements done that affect your finances or your children.
Right. Yep. And we always say, look, divorce is legal, financial, emotional, and operational. There are four components to it. And yes, we're going to talk about the legal and financial issues in the process. And of course, you wouldn't be a mediator if you weren't a caring and compassionate person, right? You know, we do lose sleep at night, whether our clients know that or not. We wake up at 4 a.m. and feel bad for their children. Like, it's not an easy profession to have. But at the end of the day, we do say, look, much like yourself, Mandy, get a divorce coach, somebody who's been there, who understands the issues. They can help you with that kind of divorce-related anger. Then, if you really have really, you know, deep-seated issues that you're trying to work past, also encourage you to have a therapist. Because really, people, I tell you, people underestimate the emotional impact that the divorce has on them. I think it's the worst kept secret. Guys, we can go through all the numbers, right? I can pull out every formula chart, graph, you know, spreadsheet you want. But at the end of the day, really what it is you're angry about something, and that's what's creating this impasse. It's not that you don't understand the guideline and you don't think the state of New Jersey or Illinois was fair. It's because you missed my parents' anniversary party.
Right. So if they're able to leave the, or understand about the need to leave the emotions at home as much as possible, what else do you do or tell your clients that they need to do to prepare for mediation?
Well, I think the biggest thing is get educated. And one thing that happens is in a couple, and as a, you know, I've been married now 11 years, and I've seen with my wife, who's also my partner, Cheryl, we see our roles in our relationship developing, right? So, you know, she takes out the trash, I walk the dogs, you know, those kinds of things happen. And what I see as a big deal, especially with a lot of divorcing couples, is just through nobody's fault, nothing insidious. Just one person has taken on the family finances. They pay the bills, they make the 401k deposits, whatever it is, and the other party comes in at a disadvantage. So my number one thing is, when we do our discovery process up front, we gather all the financials, I say to people, look, you should both be reviewing all the other things that the other party is submitting, so that you can know what your checking account balances look like, your retirement balances look like, what your house is worth, how many credit cards you have, because sometimes people simply don't know that. Information is power. And that's really the key to having a successful negotiation, is leveling that playing field. So that's my number one recommendation to people, is get informed and get educated up front about what you're, in our world, what your marital finances and situation looks like.
And do you give them a list of documents to bring with them to mediation?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a what we call like a, it's like a discovery checklist, as well as we have a series of forms and worksheets we have them fill out. So we have them do budgets for both what their marital lifestyle looked like together, as well as what they think it might look like as an individual apart. We have them do a balance sheet, which lists all of their marital assets and liabilities. We have them do a miscellaneous information form with everything from their driver's license to their kids' birthdays and social security numbers, because a lot of times this stuff is needed for the court paperwork. You know, we have a myriad of stuff that we have them do in advance. And I think a lot of them, when our clients come into the first session, they say, wow, you know, that was a real eye-opener. I'd ask you, Mandy, like, do you do a budget every month and, like, adjust the budget, you know, as you go through the year? I mean, I don't. You know, I go to the ATM machine, or I put the credit card down on the counter and I buy the sweater or the groceries or whatever. But they really have to think about it. So that, in a way, what we're doing is we're sort of forcing them to pay attention. And even though at the time it seems kind of cruel and unusual because it's a lot of work, I think they really do appreciate it at the end. They go, wow, I really learned a lot through that discovery process. And Of course, we guide them and, you know, help them every step of the way. It's not like, here you go, have fun, see ya, you know.
And I think that that's one of the key differences between mediation and going a more traditional litigation route, is you take on more of that work yourself, whereas with the traditional litigation, that work is still happening, but it may be a paralegal who's gathering all the information and data and processing it and, you know, and doing the comparisons. So,
That's part of why mediation, in my, you know, opinion, it's why it costs less, because when the client does it, it's free. You know, all it costs them is some time. And we sort of jokingly refer to it around here as the lost weekend. We say, look, guys, you know what? I hope it's raining for you this weekend or snowing, because this is what you're going to be doing for the next couple of days.
Right.
And they get it. And it's, you know, it's like, once you get it over with and done, then you're on your way and you're in much better shape.
Right. Well, Joe, we're up on our time, and this has been wonderful talking to you this morning. Do you have one more tip for our listeners about how to make their mediation successful?
Yeah, I'll say this, and I hope everybody's gotten to know me in the sense that I'm a pretty lighthearted person, but I do mean this when I say it, is that, you know, recognize the time for fighting is over and that you're adults. And sometimes people, when they get in these situations, they act like they're five-year-olds. They cross their arms. They stomp their feet. They hold their breath. It's like, guys, we're adults. We're here. Recognize that. Let's act like adults. Let's negotiate like adults. And let's leave the name-calling and everything at home, okay? We just need to move forward. And that's really it. It's time to grow up, I hate to say, you know?
Well, that's a great tip, and thank you again, Joe.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been really great speaking with you.
Listeners, our guest today was Joe Dillon. Joe is co-founder of Equitable Mediation. If you're in New Jersey or Illinois, you'll want to check out Joe's and Cheryl's services. And no matter where you are, you'll want to download a copy of the free ebook, 10 Compelling Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce. And that's available at reasonstomediate.com. And I will include the link in the show description. So during our conversation this morning, Joe mentioned a couple of times about the cost of divorce. Well, I know here in Colorado, the average cost when both parties are using attorneys and they don't go to trial and there's no dispute over child custody, it's an estimated $10,000 to $15,000 per party. That's $30,000 that many of the people that I work with simply don't have, or would much rather spend on other things, such as putting their kids through college. mediating your divorce can be a very viable alternative. And with more and more attorneys being willing to work on an unbundled basis, you can get the legal advice you need and avoid the hostility and negativity that often comes with a more traditional divorce. Again, do sign up for some more great divorce advice at my website, sincemydivorce.com. And you can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes. I want to thank you for listening today. I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce. And I hope you'll join us again for more conversations.